Gloves. Thanks for joining you here. I am John Scott. I appreciate the support. I hope everybody's doing well on a Tuesday here in April. You would figure it's beautiful, right? You know, it's where spring has sprung. We just had Easter. Everything should be blooming. Not here in Traverse City. No. It was snow yesterday, hail yesterday, sleet. We had snippets of sunshine coming through. It's just been a plethora of weather in Traverse City, and I'm sick of it. I'm honestly done with it. It was just awful yesterday, and I wake up today, it's beautiful, gorgeous sunshine, but it's 30 degrees. It's cold. It's frigidly cold. I want it to turn. I'm still pumping out wood and boiler and fireplaces and trying to heat my house. I'm like, I just want to be done with it. You know what I mean? I look around the country. I go downstate. I go to Canada. The weather's balmy. It's warm. It's 70 degrees. People are walking around in shorts, doing what you should do in April. Like, it snowed yesterday here in Traverse City. It rained yesterday. It hailed yesterday. It was sunny yesterday. All of that in one day. And it was April 5th, April 6th. Like, it's just stupid, the weather that's going on here in Traverse City. But anyways, I digress. I hope everybody had a good Easter. I hope you enjoyed the Ryan Vandenbush interview. Guy's a absolute nails of a player. It was a pleasure talking to him. You don't know what you're going to get into when you interview somebody you've never met before. And he was good. Very smart. Yeah. Very, very kind of intellectually there. You can tell when you talk to a guy, they're a thinker, and he was a thinker. You know, sometimes you talk to guys and they're just like dudes and they just chat. He was not one of those guys. He was very intellectual. He thought about his answers, and it's good. It was very good. So thank you to him for coming on. I appreciate everybody listening to those. But moving on, I had an interesting week. It's been a very trying week. As you know, winter turns to spring, everybody knows everything melts and you have a million things to do. And my laundry list of things is just absolutely incredible. And on a whole, it can make you a little bit overwhelming. So I'm trying to tick off things off my list. You know, I had to do my taxes here in USA. They're due April 15th. So I'm hopefully going to get those out today. We tapped our maple trees, me and my kids. So I got to boil down the sap. It's hard to do when it's raining and snowing. So I have to do that. I got to tile my bathroom floor for my kids up in the bonus room where they do their schoolwork. I need to get more wood because it's still flipping cold. And the boiler just eats wood. I need to get gravel for my driveway because I'm going to rent out my little house and I got to get the driveway fixed up. I got to do all these dang things. And to compound the problems, my one baby just won't stop pooping her pants. So I'm changing her diaper. I think yesterday I changed like four times. And then you got to give her a bath because it's just like, it's just a lot. But I had a glimmer of hope. You know, doing this podcast, I get emails regularly from people because they see I don't do social media very much. My YouTube is lacking. My Instagram is lacking. My Facebook, my Twitter, my all this junk. I just stay off of it as much as I can because I don't like it personally. And B, it just takes a lot of time. So I don't want to deal with it. But I get people who email me and they go, hey, I got a great idea. And I appreciate the emails. I can do this. I can do that. I can do the other thing. And inevitably, it just follows up with, hey, we'll give you this much money to do it. And in my head, I'm like, I don't. Podcasting is so funny where one month you make a ton of money and the next month you make nothing, absolutely zero. So it's very cyclical. It's ebb and flow. You can't pay someone on a monthly salary because you just don't know where the income's coming from. I'll get a huge sponsor for 6 months, then I'll get nothing for 5 months. If you listen to the show, you know, I've been living in the desert here for the last year just because it's tough, but I enjoy doing it. So I keep on it. But anyways, I got an email from some master YouTuber. He goes, listen, we can transition your YouTube page. We can get you more, what is it called? Followings. We can get you more engagements. That's what they call it. More engagements. We're very good at this. We take all these, you know, YouTubers and we increase and we grow their channel. If you succeed, we succeed. There's no money down, whatever it is. So I go, oh, this is interesting. I'm into this. So I respond back. Sounds great. We set up a meeting. It's this young kid, 20-year-old kid. His name is Rish. And I'm not racist, but my wife and I have been scammed, attempted to be scammed a lot. And we've had our credit card stolen and we've had, you know, hacking attempts quite a few times, two or three times over the last, you know, 15 years. Typically, it's not, you know, it's one ethnicity who does it, and it's usually Indians, and they're out of India or somewhere in that area. And so when I see the name Rish, I warning right away. And of course we jump on a YouTube call, and this kid's ethnicity is Indian. And we start talking, and everything seems to be going well. And he's having me do these exercises. And this is a 20-year-old kid, keep in mind. So I'm just trying to be respectful. This is his gig. He's like, get a pencil and you know, write down what I'm telling you. And it's very Tim Robbins. It's very see it and achieve it, believe it, achieve it. You know, you will things into existence. And I'm just sitting there like, okay, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. You're eating up a lot of my time. And I'm very much cut to the chase. Let's not beat around the bush. Get it out in the open. Like, what are we doing here? And so I cut him off and I go, listen, I need help doing my YouTube. If you guys want to help, if you want to gain my engagements and my accessibility to people and, you know, do more of this and that, let's do it. Otherwise, let's just get off the call. And he goes, well, okay, let's get down to brass tacks. And he starts with this spreadsheet. All you need to do is invest $7,000 a month with us, and we will guarantee to increase your reach. And if you haven't made $25,000 in the first 6 months, sorry, $7,000 total, he was guaranteeing he would make me $25,000 in the first 6 months, or they would give the money back, and then I would have his program free for the whole year. But you have to follow all of our steps. And so I cut him off, and I said, well, what are all these steps? And he started to list out everything, and I kind of cut him off again. I said, so what if I don't follow one step to the T? And he goes, well, then you don't get your money back. And I just said, Rich, this sounds like a scam. It sounds like you do this all the time. And he goes, well, the success rate on ours about getting the $25,000 is almost 95%. And then I cut him off again. I said, well, what is the success rate if you don't follow all the steps? How often do the people not follow all the steps and they don't get their money back? And he goes, well, that's quite high. So it's just like, it's a huge scam. And it just drives me crazy. He wasted a half an hour of my time, but I guess I wasted my own time because I fell into the trap. And I'm tired of the scams. I'm tired of the people trying to take advantage of you. I just want people to be upfront, nice, and just trying to help people out, not trying to steal money. It just bothers me. Anyways, moving on. I'm in my fantasy hockey league championship, which is very excited. I joined the league with a guy from my Patreon, Mark. He said, does anybody want to join? I said, fantastic. I haven't done a fantasy hockey league in a couple years. I enjoy hockey. Let's do it. And I'm in the finals. I got first overall pick, which helped. And I took Connor McDavid, but I got like a Jason Robertson. I got a Matthew Schaefer who's playing good. I got an Evan Bouchard who should be a Norris Trophy winner this year. But politics and Edmonton hate probably won't let that happen. But I'm in the finals. And it's fantastic. We got one more week to go. We've done 1 week. I think it's neck and neck. But I don't play the game of, you know, picking up guys and dropping guys. I think I've had 10 transactions the whole season. And the guy I'm playing has had a million. And I went and looked at his roster. And he doesn't dress any defensemen. He has 20 forwards on his roster. And he just recycles those guys. So he always has a full roster of forwards. Whereas I just have my five defensemen and forwards. And I don't think my strategy is too sound, but when you have McDavid and you have Robertson and you have Schaefer and you have Bouchard, that makes up for a lot of my just naivete when it comes to being a GM. So if I win, I don't think I win anything, but it's a little feather in my cap because I should win because I am the NHL alumni. I know these players. I've played the game. Technically, I should win. But anyways, if you're not a member of my Patreon, I encourage you to join because we do fun stuff like this. We do fantasy hockey. And that's another thing the scammer did. He goes, do you have any other, you know, income streams? And I go, well, my Patreon, I have like four people in there and they pay me $5 a month. He's like, oh, we're going to maximize that. We're going to really maximize that. I'm like, well, how would we do that? And he goes, you just talk about it more. I'm like, well, I can do that already. I don't need your help to do that. So it got me thinking. I get, you know, plenty of listeners on this show. And it would be great if I didn't have to click the ad thing on YouTube and I could just not do ads. So if you want to help me out, if you appreciate what I do, throw me a Patreon subscription. I'll put the link in the bio, whether it's Acast or on YouTube, wherever you're listening. I would appreciate it. It's only $5 a month. You can join our Slack channel. I chat with them every day if I can, at least a couple times a week. You can get other things from me. I can do a cameos or whatever. But anyways, that I would appreciate that. And then maybe we can get rid of the ads altogether and we can just go straight Patreon and then be done with all the ads. Because they're not fun. Nobody likes listening to them. I don't like putting them on there, but it is what it is. Moving on. The NHL, speaking of washing your hands with things and just being done with things, it seems like teams are pulling the trigger quickly on firing GMs, firing coaches, and it's a weird time of the season to do it. And going into the playoffs, we should be talking about who's on the bubble, you know, playoff matchups, year-end awards, things of that nature. But we can't, because teams have gotten into the habit of firing GMs, firing coaches, getting interim coaches. And we're not talking bottom of the barrel teams. We are talking playoff caliber teams that are gearing up for a playoff run at the last second, doing the bait and switch and going, no, 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 new coach, new system, new philosophy. Let's go. We don't think we can win a Stanley Cup with the current guy who's in there. Let's change it up. And it got me thinking, why are we doing this now? Why is this all of a sudden happening this year and the last 3 or 4 years? And it all begins and ends with the St. Louis Blues in 2019. They brought in Craig Berube. He completely flipped the switch on that franchise and on that team. They went on this huge historic run where they won 30 of their last 35 games. They made the playoffs. They continued that hot streak through the playoffs, and they won in 7 games versus the Boston Bruins to win the Stanley Cup. This is the reason why all of these GMs and presidents and teams now think, well, okay, hold on. Maybe this season is not all for naught. All it takes is one new coach, one new philosophy, one new leader, and we could have a Stanley Cup champion on our hands. And that's why you see Patrick Waugh getting fired by the New York Islanders. He was made coach, I think, last year. This is only his second full season. And he was ousted this week. And Pete DeBoer, who, I don't know if I'm the only one, but it seems to me that there are, like, it's just a bag of coaches. And whenever someone gets fired, you just reach in and you grab one out. It's like, oh, who's it going to be this time? Oh, Pete DeBoer. Okay, he's out. Oh, who's it going to be? Oh, it's Bruce Cassidy. Okay, he's out. Okay, who's it going to be now? It's Jim Montgomery. Okay, who's it going to be now? Oh, it's Rick Bonus. It's just, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it just is always funny, because if you would have asked me really quickly, like, hey, John, where does Pete DeBoer coach? I'd go, Dallas? Vegas? It would take me a second to realize he wasn't in the league coaching, but he is now, because he replaced Patrick Waugh with the New York Islanders, and they have, what, 6 games left in the season? And Patrick Waugh, all reports, was very, very much liked by the players, you know, very respected. He has a good system. He obviously has a wunderkind in Matthew Schaefer. They weren't expected to compete this year. That's the frustrating part. If I'm Patrick Waugh, you traded Noah Dobson. You know, obviously you went out and you get Shen at the deadline, but that's besides the point. At the beginning of the season, you're not expected to compete. You get rid of Brock Nelson. You get rid of Noah Dobson. You're a seller. You're rebuilding for next year and the year after. You're building around Matthew Schaefer. You're retaining assets. You got Matthew Barzal. You got some good pieces. But this wasn't supposed to be their year. All of a sudden, they get hot early on. They're a very strong team. Matthew Schaefer is hands down the Calder Trophy winner. And this team is in contention for a playoff spot. They floundered of late. They had a pretty rough February. They have not been playing well post-Olympic break. They're 3-7 in their last 10, so they're outside the playoffs looking in. And their GM, Darche, he obviously swung for the fences at the deadline. And he said, we need to make a change because we want to make the playoffs now for some reason. And he fires Patrick Waugh, he brings in Pete DeBoer. Will this work? I don't know. But the bigger question for me is this a good idea? And we've seen 3 teams, 4 teams do this already this season. We saw the LA Kings earlier in March. They fired Jim Hiller. They brought in DJ Smith. We saw Columbus. They fired Dean Evason. They bring in Rick Bonus. We see, obviously, the Vegas Golden Knights. They fired Bruce Cassidy, bring in John Tortorella. And now the New York Islanders, they fired Patrick Waugh, and they bring in Pete DeBoer. 4 teams, 4 potential Stanley Cup playoff teams in the last month and a half, firing their coaches and bringing in a new coach. Does that make sense? As a player, it sucks. It absolutely sucks because you have a coach, they have their tendencies, they have their systems, and you're used to that. And as a player, you don't like change. Players love schedules. Players like things that are consistent. We don't want to come into a locker room not knowing what to expect. And if you're a team vying for the playoffs and at the last second, and this is last second, you guys, especially the Islanders and the Vegas Golden Knights, this is last second stuff, to have a new coach come in and to have to go through that getting to know you period of a coach, it's impossible. It's very, very difficult. And I would not wish it on anybody. So to think that Pete DeBoer can come in and all of a sudden rescue the New York Islanders, I don't see it happening. I really, really don't. Right now they sit one spot out of the wild card spot. And what is Pete DeBoer going to change? What is John Tortorella going to change? I don't understand the reasoning behind this. Yes, the players maybe want to play a little bit harder for them. And hey, it's worked in Vegas. They've won three in a row for John Tortorella. But would they have won those three games if it was Bruce Cassidy? I don't know. They played the Calgary Flames, they played the Vancouver Canucks, and they played the Edmonton Oilers. Those are three pretty dumpy teams. Odds on, they would have won those games anyways. So is that a John Tortorella bump, or is that just a schedule being the schedule and you're playing beatable teams and you're beating them? So moving back to Pete DeBoer, moving back to Patrick Roy, do I think this makes an absolute difference for this team? Do I think it'll all of a sudden give them a bump and they'll make the playoffs? No, I don't. When you look at the remaining strength of schedule, it's tough. They have, what, five games left? Four games left? They're 1 point behind the Ottawa Senators. They play the Hurricanes, the Canadiens, the Senators in Toronto. I think they lose all of those games potentially. And then what happens then? You're stuck, not stuck, but you have Pete DeBoer. Do you re-sign him long-term? What happens then? Does it eliminate your coaching search? Is he your end-all, be-all guy that you wanted all along? Or was this a panic move? And if you're Mathieu Darche, you fire Patrick Roy, you need someone right away. Pete DeBoer has been there, done that. He's been to the Stanley Cup Finals. Like, he's a very well-respected coach. Is this a guy you really wanted at the end of the day? So I just don't understand the reasoning in this. Patrick Roy, now I think he's getting paid by Colorado. He's getting paid by the New York Islanders. And he's probably going to sign on next year to be a coach because he is a very good coach. And the players now have to figure out, okay, are we changing systems? Is the power play the same? Is the penalty kill the same? Yes, it is. So what does Pete DeBoer bring to the table? Just a different voice in the locker room to say, oh yeah, go get him. Rah, rah, let's go. It's just, you know, a cheerleader trying not to get fired because he doesn't have time to change systems. He doesn't have time to do anything. And it's too late. It really is too late for the Vegas Golden Knights and the New York Islanders. Maybe Vegas can implement some of Tortorella's system, the way he forechecks his neutral zone. Four games in a week doesn't give Pete DeBoer any time to do anything. And it's almost kind of unfair to him because they will miss the playoffs and his record will be 0-4, and then you go, well, maybe you're not the right fit for this team, and then he gets fired. So it's such a what have you done for me lately league, and Pete DeBoer is going to find out fast that he's going to be out of a job with the New York Islanders because he signed on for this, and it was a very, very uphill battle for him. So I don't. And then in the New York, saying in New York, the New Jersey Devils fires their GM. Like, what's the point? What's the point of doing this late in the season? Wait till the offseason. There's no reasoning behind this. I just don't understand. The Toronto Maple Leafs firing Brad Trevelyan. I hate that last name. Firing him. What's the point? There's no rhyme or reason behind it unless there was some disagreement between him and the president. I just don't understand the timing of all of these. But anyways, moving on. Now let's transition to the wild card talk because we have all these scenarios. It's been a while since I can remember where I've seen this many teams vying for the playoffs. Typically around this time of the season, the top eight are pretty much locked up. You know, there's five games left. There might be one battle for the last wild card spot between two teams. It's very rare when you look at the schedule and you go, damn, like in the Eastern Conference, there's five teams vying for the last playoff spot. In the Western Conference, you go, damn, there's four or five teams or six teams vying for that last playoff spot. And typically, and I've been in playoff battles like this. I remember when I first got called up to the Minnesota Wild, it was a dogfight to get into that last playoff spot. We were wrestling. I don't know who we were, but we ended up getting 99 points. We had a hell of a season, and we missed out by 1 point in the playoffs, and it was heartbreaking. But I remember those last four or five games. It was like the Stanley Cup playoffs, game 7. People were diving in front of pucks. You were doing everything you can to win those games. everybody from the top to the bottom. And we were winning. But the only thing is the other teams were winning too, because it was just every night was just do or die. And that's what you expect. When you look at this season, it has a little different feel to it. It's almost like the teams that are vying to get into the playoffs don't want to make the playoffs. It's a very strange scenario. When you look at the Eastern Conference, the Washington Capitals, the Columbus Blue Jackets, the Red Wings, the Islanders, they're doing everything they can to not make the playoffs. Like the Washington Capitals were on a pretty good hot streak. You know, they beat the Buffalo Sabres, but then in the same vein, they lose to the New Jersey Devils 7-3. And then the final cherry on top is when you lose to the New York Rangers 8-1. Like you just shake your head where you go, okay, if I take those two games where I'm playing the Rangers, who are arguably the worst team in the league, and the Devils, who are right there beside them, and I win those two games, they are firmly in a playoff spot. And when you look back, you go, gosh, this could be Ovi's last season. This could be the last hurrah for this iteration of the Washington Capitals. And you lose two games that are absolutely winnable. Not even absolutely winnable. They need to be wins. And so when you look back and you miss out of the playoffs by 2 points, which inevitably they will miss the playoffs, and it'll be like by 2 points, you should feel shame because you let those games slip away. And the same can be said for the Columbus Blue Jackets. They were the hottest team in the NHL. They still are. But over the last week, I know they played good teams, but you lose to the Winnipeg Jets. You lose to the Carolina Hurricanes twice. You lose to the Boston Bruins. You get beat by the San Jose Sharks. You get beat by the Montreal Canadiens. And these are all in a row, by the way. You get beat by the New York Islanders. That stretch of, what is it, 7 games, and you win one? That's where you can look back and go, damn. Like, we had it. And then my favorite of all is the Detroit Red Wings, because everybody knows how much I hate the Detroit Red Wings. And they were firmly at the top of the Atlantic Division going into the Olympic break. They were just on fire. Coming out of the break, they've obviously floundered, but they still had a chance to make the playoffs. Just like the Washington Capitals and the Columbus Blue Jackets, they lose to the New York Rangers. They lose to the Minnesota Wild in the game they should have won. Patrick Kane takes a terrible, terrible penalty right at the end of the game to let Minnesota win in regulation. So you give up on a point right there. They lose to the Pittsburgh Penguins. They lose to the Philadelphia Flyers and the Ottawa Senators and the Boston Bruins. All of these teams that they're wrestling with, they're 4-point games, and you lose all of these games in regulation. So if they have anyone to blame, it's absolutely themselves. And I just saw something on Twitter where I think Elliot Friedman reported that Steve Yzerman had the opportunity, to trade for Quinn Hughes at the deadline. Quinn wanted to go to Detroit. They were one of the teams he was willing to waive his no trade to. But he didn't want to pay the price. He did not want to pony up what it took to get Quinn Hughes without him extending, to, you know, extend and trade, which makes sense. But when you look at this team and you look at how they're built, they have a solid, I don't want to say forward group, but they have some good talent up front and they have some good guys on the back end. But if you were to eliminate the Justin Falk acquisition, who he's out of the lineup right now, if you put a Quinn Hughes alongside a Mo Sider or a Simon Edvinson, then all of a sudden you have a Ben Chiarot playing with a Sider or an Edvinson, you immediately vault into the playoffs in my eyes. You have a pretty good top two line with a Larkin, Raymond, DeBrincat, Kopp, Kane. Like, that's a serviceable top two lines. But Quinn Hughes, he is a needle mover. And if Steve Yzerman wasn't on the hot seat already, which he should be. He should be gone already. Speaking of GMs being fired right now in a strange time of the season to do it, he should have been gone at the deadline. The fact that he had the chance to get Quinn Hughes and the fact that Quinn Hughes wanted to go to Detroit and he didn't pull that trigger because he was nervous about not re-signing him. You know, you have to give Steve his kind of up-uppance here, because I get it. He wasn't willing to risk the future of this team. And he was willing to, I guess, be fired for not mortgaging the future of his team, because other GMs would have done everything in their power to retain their job and made that trade and give away 2 first-rounders and a prospect to get Quinn Hughes because they knew it would have got them to the playoffs this season. But Steve, he has a plan. So you have to give him got to commend him for that. But how often does a guy like Quinn Hughes come up? Very, very rare. How often can you get a generational talent, a guy who is, he's a game changer. There are very few Quinn Hugheses in the NHL who you can plug him in. He'll play 30 minutes and he will definitely impact every single game he plays in. That's the kind of guy Quinn Hughes is. And if he had that option to get him and didn't do it, fire his ass right now. And I know he will get fired because Red Wings won't make the playoffs, but boy, that's a fireable offense in of its own if you had the chance to get a Quinn Hughes and you didn't do it. All right, moving back to the Eastern Conference. The Red Wings, the Blue Jackets, the Capitals, all with winnable games, teams they should have beat, and they don't win it. And moving finally to the New York Islanders with the new coach, Pete DeBoer, he's doing everything he can to try to, you know, influence this team to make the playoffs. They lose to the Philadelphia Flyers. They lose to the Carolina Hurricanes. They lose to the Buffalo Sabres. They are on a losing streak. So all of these teams, what they have in common is there's no urgency to make the playoffs. Like, where is it? Where is the do or die? Where is, you know, I will do whatever it takes to win. It's not there. They are all losing to teams they should beat. They are all losing four-point games. And that's why, in my eyes, when I look at the standings in the Eastern Conference, I don't think it'll change. I think at the end of the day, the two wildcard teams will be the Bruins and the Senators. The Flyers will stay in the third place of the Metro Conference. The Atlantic will have five teams make the playoffs. And that's it. And it'll be a hell of a playoffs if we can get Tampa to play Ottawa and Boston to play Carolina, Buffalo, Montreal, Pittsburgh, Philly. Lots of rivalries there. But what I want to see is, they had a great game last night too. Buffalo Sabres and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Who had this on their bingo card for this being a rivalry this season? The passion, the anger between these two teams is just incredible. Obviously, Hagel going after Rasmus Dahlin, Buffalo responding correctly the right way, Buffalo beating them the last two times they've played. It's a hell of a rivalry. I want to see these two teams in the playoffs in the second round. It's going to be just unbelievable. All right, moving on to the Western Conference. Same thing. I think, you know, the top divisions are set. You got Colorado, Dallas, Minnesota. Nobody's touching those three teams. Those are arguably the three best teams in the NHL, and they're in the same division in the Central. The Pacific should be exiled to the AHL with Edmonton, Anaheim, and Vegas. They are atrocious. I don't know what happened to this division. Well, I do know the GMs suck and the players aren't playing that well this season, but Vegas has struggled. Anaheim has kind of had glimpses of what they could be in the future, and Edmonton is just a train wreck. And I love Connor McDavid, what he said. He's like, we're leading the worst division. It's like a pillow fight in this division because they know they suck. They know they have no chance to win a Stanley Cup. And he's, I think, fed up enough to just tell the truth. And it's refreshing to hear him when he gives an interview because you can look at him and see, and you can hear it in his voice. He's just tired of it. He's absolutely tired of it. But moving on to the wild card, I think Utah has the first wild card locked up. And then it goes down to that second wild card spot. There's the LA King, the Nashville Predators, the San Jose Sharks, the Winnipeg Jets, the St. Louis Blues, who have come back again as they always do in March and April. They're the opposite of the Detroit Red Wings. The Red Wings start hot, and then they stink the second half of the season. The St. Louis Blues stink the first half of the season, and they always come on strong at the end of the season. If they could somehow combine those two teams, they would be a juggernaut, and they would never, ever lose a game again. But in the Western Conference, who has the last spot? When you look at strength of schedule, which I think plays a huge part in the playoffs at this time of year, they either have four or five games left. The LA Kings have five. The Predators have five. The Sharks have six. The Winnipeg Jets have five, and the St. Louis Blues have six. So some teams have games in hand. The LA Kings have the easiest strength of schedule in the whole NHL. They play Vancouver twice. They play Calgary. They play Seattle, and they play Edmonton. I think it starts and ends right there. They don't play any teams who are chasing them. All the teams they play are terrible, and I'm including Edmonton in that list. They should walk into the playoffs. But as we've seen in the Eastern Conference, these teams don't want to make the playoffs. These teams struggle to win winnable games. And when you look at the LA Kings, they squeak past Toronto 7-6. But the thing is, they're winning these games. They had a big win last night versus the Nashville Predators. Then they lose to the Predators last week, and they're squeaking by games. So in my eyes, and I'm an expert at this, I think the LA Kings walk into the playoffs. And the top eight in the East stays, the top eight in the West stays. But do I want it to be that way? No. Would I like to see the LA Kings make the playoffs? No. I don't think they'll make any noise. In my heart of hearts, and I'm a San Jose guy, I want San Jose to win the cup. To make the playoffs. And there is an avenue for them to make the playoffs. They have one game in hand on the LA Kings. They have the second easiest schedule in the NHL. They play Vancouver, Chicago, Winnipeg, Nashville, Anaheim, and Edmonton. So a couple, you know, tough games in there, but easiest, second easiest schedule in the NHL. They have to win out to make the playoffs. Do I think they do it? I don't, unfortunately. Do they make the playoffs going 4-2? I don't think so. I think LA goes 5-0 their last five games. I don't think Vancouver is going to show up. I don't think Calgary or Seattle. Maybe that Edmonton game gives them a little bit of a hiccup. But LA has been playing decent hockey, getting close wins, grinding games out. Panarin's been playing fantastic. Adrian Kempe has been playing lights out. They've been playing decent enough hockey to win some games. So in the Western Conference, I would love to see San Jose make the playoffs. They get Will Smith and Calabrini and Eklund and Dickinson and all these young guys some playoff experience, because in my eyes, this is the team to beat in the Western Conference in about 4 years. Not yet, probably in 4 years. And I would love to see them in the playoffs to play the Colorado Avalanche in the first round. I think that'd be a lot of fun. But I don't know. What do you think? Who do you think's getting in the East? Who do you think's getting into the West? I love that there's actually meaningful games down the stretch, and we're not just playing it out to get to the playoffs because we already know who's playing who in the playoffs, and we're just trying to get the regular season over with. This is fun. This is exciting. GMs are getting fired. Coaches are getting fired. Teams are playing meaningful games, even if they aren't winning them. And it's a lot of fun to watch. It's a lot of fun to talk about. So let me know what you think. Who's getting in the East and the West? And we'll talk to you guys later this week and break down some more stuff. I appreciate the support. Join my Patreon. Hope everybody's having a good spring. Cheers, everybody.